Hello, everybody. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is The Week from In the Loop. There is some evidence as we head into the holiday season here that the bad economy might actually be making us better people. Exhibit A, when I was a business reporter, this trend used to depress me every single year. People giving more and more gift cards. It's easy, it's flexible. It's also impersonal, it's lazy, and it is no fun. That is my professional opinion. This year, stores are betting we reverse that nasty trend. Instead of shelling out for plastic cards so our loved ones can blow money at suggested retail price, analysts expect we will be hunting for sales and actually trying to pick out appropriate gifts for the people that we care about. Imagine that. In a tough economy, maybe we'll be looking for smaller but more expressive presents. I know in my family, on both sides, everybody's setting spending limits, and this is what's different, actually seem to be sticking with them this year. And how about charity? Thinking about that this time of year as well. Corporate giving and giving by really wealthy people is all but certain to go down. Endowments are shriveling up, the money just isn't there. But for the rest of us, there are two forces at work. On one hand, something economists call the wealth effect. Even if our cash flow hasn't changed, our houses are worth less, retirement funds are down by a third, we feel strapped. Spend less, period, on everything, in theory. On the other hand, I'm sensing a very different vibe from people. When you feel yourself the hard times pressing in, you're even more sensitive to people who might be worse off. At the office here, only a few stray cards are left on the Adopt-a-Family board. At Boeing in Seattle, employees tripled their usual donations to an area food shelf. Past recessions show that giving doesn't decline nearly as much as the economy that supports it. This one we're in right now might be a real test. For this Thanksgiving week show, we'll spend some time on shopping and charity. On the topic of charity, let's start with an update on the tough times in Postville, Iowa. We've updated you on Postville before on the show. It's a little rural town in northeast Iowa, about 2,300 people, home to the country's biggest processing plant for kosher meat. 6 months ago, the feds arrested hundreds of undocumented workers. This was the biggest immigration raid in history at the time. Overnight, most of the workforce for the plant was either in custody or disappeared. The company, Agriprocessors, tried to keep the lines running. It got workers wherever it could find them, from homeless shelters in Texas to a tiny island country in the Pacific called Palau. But today, the plant is essentially shut down. The former CEO is under arrest. The state of Iowa is fining them millions for workplace violations. And earlier this month, the company filed for bankruptcy. As of this week, hundreds of these replacement workers the company brought in are basically stranded in Postville and some nearby towns. Much of the information and assistance for these workers is running through the community radio station, KPVL. Jeff Abbas is the station manager there, and thank you for spending a few minutes with us.
Pleasure to be with you, Jeff.
So I understand on Monday, the town council in Postville declared this a humanitarian crisis or something of that nature. How did all these stranded workers come to be in this situation?
The official term is humanitarian and economic disaster. When these people came into town through these labor supply companies, they mainly brought them in from inner city areas, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Cincinnati. These are people that had been out of work for some time because of job availability being very scarce where they came from, or they're basically living check to check because of not a high enough wage. The labor supply companies would tell people that they would get a month's free rent, they would be furnished places to live. They painted a very rosy picture.
So what became of so many of these people and their housing when the plant essentially shut down?
Well, that's just it. There was no check issued for that final week of work, which was Friday the 14th, November 14th. We've got moratoriums on having the utilities shut off. The landlord is trying to evict some of them for non-payment of rent because they have no money. Essentially, they're faced with a lot of questions. Will I still have power next week? Will I still have a house next week? What am I going to do if the plant doesn't open up? Are we going to get our checks?
And how many people are we talking about here? Have you done a count?
My best estimate at this point is about 150. However, we can't forget the Jewish community here in town who's been also affected by this with the same situation, non-payment of utilities, no wages, no payment. Some of the rabbis were not paid for as long as 10 weeks. So we're probably numbering between 400 and 425 individuals in the Jewish communities, all total 600 people.
So these workers who were brought in as replacements after the immigration raid, now they're living with great uncertainty in Postville. Would many of them like to leave if they could, or are they waiting for the plant to open?
If they had the cash, 90% of them would leave right now.
But they don't even have the money for bus fare to get out of town?
No, sir.
You've said that there's a possibility that this could become a dangerous situation in town. How does that transpire?
Let me give you a good example. I had a gentleman come here. He stopped and he said, "Sir, you've been very good to us here, and I'd like to leave you with a little warning." And I said, "Well, this is kind of weird." But he sat down. He started to tell me that the house he was living in, basically ex-cons, a couple of them still carrying guns, they had been talking about robbing some of the local businesses. They were watching the habits of the women coming out of the businesses carrying money bags to the bank. And they were also concerned that they wanted to go up to the Rubashkin home because they had seen the Associated Press article where they found $20,000 in cash in Rubashkin's home.
Rubashkin, we should clarify, we're talking about the CEO.
Shalom Rubashkin.
The former CEO of the company. Yeah.
The evening after that Friday night, there was an attempted break-in at the grocery store.
We should put a fine point on it, talking about the potentially dangerous situation that here's a company trying to hire people to work very low-wage jobs on short notice. So the belief is that a lot of these folks came with criminal records.
Yes, and, you know, this was traditionally a community where you didn't have to lock your front door or lock your car doors at night. There is a lot of fear in this community right now.
One of the great things about the Postville story up until the raid was how this little town in Iowa had come to be at peace with having many immigrants in their community and really embracing this diversity that had come to their town. Do you think that sense has been lost?
Very much so. It set us back probably 20 years. You know, it took a long time to reach that point. And it was no dark secret that there were undocumented workers at the plant, but everything was working. After May 12th, anything that was good in Postville prior to that point was virtually destroyed by the federal government.
Well, now I should say there are still many people like you, right, who are reaching out and trying to make this humanitarian situation as good as it can be.
Indeed, there are. Most everybody in town has ponied up with food donations, coats, blankets. You know, there's some old 60s radical hippie roots here that have been reactivated. I'm energized. There's a cause here, a number of causes, some more which will come to light in the coming months. But, you know, right now we're trying to save the community, save the company, and get things on a track where they can get back to where they were. It's going to take time. And it's going to take a lot of work, but I have nothing but confidence that we can do it.
Do people really want the plant to recover at this point?
I mean, it's important that we have the plant because of the economy that it creates here in Northeast Iowa. We want the plant back, but we want it operated openly, honestly, and fairly.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your time.
Jeff, I appreciate the opportunity.
That's Jeff Abbas. He's the station manager at the community radio station in Postville, Iowa, where they are coordinating some of the assistance for these workers who are stranded there. If you're curious about how you might help out, he's got some information up at their website, kpvlradio.com. This is The Week from In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich. Last year at about this time when we were doing our live audience shows, we did a whole hour called Charity, What Gives? It still holds up pretty well. We talked about religious giving, social versus cultural charity, giving money versus volunteering. You can download that at minnesotapublicradio.org/in-the-loop. Just go back to our archives from last November. As part of that show, our house band, The Smarts, worked up a nice little ditty I thought I'd revive for our episode this Thanksgiving week. They called it Give a Damn. Mm-hmm.
Couldn't possibly think that I've ever done anything at all to her. Even a fraction of the fortune that has always smiled down upon me. So it's obviously an obligation for a little something in return. Though I will never come close to doing anything to set my mind free. Sometimes it feels like I'm trying to fill the ocean up with tears. I know that the difference I can make is so very, very small. Could it be that the real motivation for me is a selfish one? I suppose, who knows, but it's better than nothing at all. Shada, 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 shada. Give your money, give your time, give your dollar, dime. Give your blood, give your sweat, give to give, give to get. Give a little, give a lot, give whatever gifts you've got. Give even more than you think you can, but most of all, give a damn.
That's The Smarts from our live show last November. More about them at thesmartsband.com. They are going to be on stage with me, as always, for our next Story Slam, which is coming up December 17th in Minneapolis. We were looking for a theme that would invite entertaining holiday stories of all kinds, and we settled on festive indigestion. Kind of has a nice ring to it. Our Story Slams, if you're not familiar, are basically a storytelling open mic. If you want to put your name in the hat, just come a little early to sign up. But of course, we need an awesome audience. Tickets are just $10. We haven't done one of these in a few months, and so we're really excited to get back on the horse. We've got details up at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. Moving on now. We are facing the prospect of the holidays in one of the most economically depressed times we have seen in years. We've got less to spend. As a result, stores are hurting and even more desperate to get us in than usual. Sitting here on Black Friday, this notoriously big shopping day, seemed like the right time to get Murray Schweitzer on the show. Murray, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Murray's one of those people out there who keep us briefed on particular areas of the news that they follow more closely than the rest of us might. And in your case, Murray, it goes right back to what you do for a living. You're a TV producer out in Washington, D.C., right?
Yeah, Jeff, I'm the NBC4 consumer producer. I work with a reporter named Liz Crenshaw, and we produce stories on consumer topics.
So we can be the latest to dispel this conventional wisdom that Black Friday is the biggest shopping day of the year. It's not, but it's still a very big one. And this year, with the economy the way it is this an especially good time right after Thanksgiving to try and get in there and get our shopping done?
Yes, and here's the reason why. In previous years, stores had plenty of stock. The store could go through the season, and as it got closer to Christmas, it would reduce prices, and then it knew after the holidays were over, it could have a discount sale and rid itself of merchandise.
And it kind of paid for a consumer to kind of play this game of chicken, I guess, leading up to Christmas.
That may not work this year because stores, like the rest of us, are having a tough time with this cash flow. And so stores are not going to be as well stocked this year as they were in previous years, meaning if you do the waiting game, the items may not be there for you. So the best prices actually this year may be on Black Friday, maybe today.
Another thing you've been looking into has to do with shipping stuff this time of year. Let's say, lots of us are sending gifts to people in other parts of the country. What should we know about that we might not?
As it turns out, the post office these days, because it's in financial trouble, is only offering the top two tier levels of prices to people selling packages. The window clerks read this off a script on the computer, and the script tells them to offer express mail first, and then its second tier of delivery, and then shut up and wait for the consumer to make a decision. That means the postal clerk is not offering you parcel post or book rate or some cheaper rate.
So you have to beat the script, I guess, by knowing what to ask. And is parcel post, is that the magic phrase?
Well, cheaper is the magic phrase
okay.
To the postal clerk. Once you ask the postal clerk if there's anything cheaper, they are now free to tell you the other options for mailing.
Is just walking into another retailer of some sort and just sort of uttering the magic word cheaper going to get you anywhere with other kinds of products?
Well, Consumer Reports said it does. Consumer Reports said saying something such as, is that the best price I can get? Is that your best price? Works a third of the time. We're talking about everything from department store clothing to electronics to anything sold in a retail store. The store knows that it's easy to walk out of one department store and into another. So is the store willing to let you walk out the door rather than give you a discount while you're there and while you have your hand on your credit card, let's say?
I would worry somebody would laugh in my face.
I have actually done this. And, you know, it's not like you're picking a fight with the guy. Sometimes the clerk says, no, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. But sometimes the clerk will say, well, I can give you an extra 10%. Is it worth the time and money to just say, can I get a better price? In my case, it's yes. How about you?
Yeah, well, if I could swallow my pride, I suppose I could save a few bucks.
Well, you make a lot of money. You probably make a lot more than I do.
Oh, sure I do. Let's leave the holiday economy behind for a minute. Just talk about the bad economy in general. You've been doing some research that might benefit those of us who are considering clipping coupons for the first time in our life.
Yeah, we get the question all the time, which grocery store is the cheapest? So we thought we'd find out. And what we found was just so totally different than what we thought we were going to find that it startled us. We went to four different grocery chains and bought a 14-item market basket off the circular, the printed newspaper circular that all stores have.
And many of us put in the recycling week after week.
Right. We bought the 14 items at store one off the circular. Then we went and purchased the exact same items at stores two, three, and four, but they weren't on sale. The 14 items on sale cost us about $80. When we went to the other three stores, the same items cost us about $110, $30 off on a 14-item market basket.
So what you're saying here, kind of a theme developing maybe, is swallow your pride. These coupons save you a lot of money. They really do.
Jeff, it's not coupons. Coupons only enhance the savings.
Sure. Shopping off the advertised items in the circular.
Planning your menu off the circular, gotcha, which has usually dozens and dozens of sale items. Here's the other point to this. Sale items in every grocery store recycle every 6 to 8 weeks or so. So if you walked in and found the soup on sale and you bought enough of that soup to last you for the next 6 or 8 weeks, the soup would come back up on sale again, and then you could restock again. And by doing this, it is possible to save for a family of four or five to save hundreds of dollars a month. Well worth it.
Well, Murray, this has been very helpful, certainly very timely. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Murray Schweitzer is an investigative producer with Consumer Watch, a series of segments produced out of NBC4 in Washington, D.C. We found him among the many interesting people in American Public Media's Public Insight Network. If you are not a part of it, you should be. Learn more at minnesotapublicradio.org. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is The Week. And this time of year, maybe you've already gotten that catalog that says the best gift of all is a farm animal bought for some far-off struggling family. Heifer International is the biggest name in that business. My family did it 1 year. Lots of people do it. A few years ago, when our show was just a baby, we had an opportunity for one of our producers to check out both ends of this transaction. This is Julie Seipel. Pretty cool story she did for us back in 2005.
I kind of envy Norma Jean Sims. She went out shopping once this year before Thanksgiving, and when it got crowded, she just left. This year, she decided no presents, just a cow.
So I called my three kids, who are all middle-aged, and I said, what would you think? And they were just very enthusiastic. They thought that was a wonderful idea.
Norma Jean had gotten a catalog in the mail. There was a water buffalo in it for $250, a goat for just over $100, and a share of a llama, $20.
I don't know anything about llamas. I know goats stink.
She used to play on her grandparents' farm as a kid. And she decided she wanted a cow. She bought one for $500 through Heifer International, not for herself, but for a family somewhere in the world who would need it. Heifer International tries to get rid of poverty by giving people farm animals. Norma Jean knows she didn't buy a particular Bessie or Clarabelle. The $500 just covers the average cost of a cow, transporting it, and training its owners. And she doesn't mind that she'll never know exactly where the cow went or who got it.
I would expect that there are people who are living in poverty, and if I would expect that they would be focused around finding a place for this heifer. Where are we going to put it? I think they'd have a whole crowd of people around. I hope it didn't upset the heifer. I would think it would be a pretty gala situation.
The heifer cow is Flori, the other one is Viola, and the little one is Bumbushka.
Actually, it was pretty festive when Flori arrived for Franciszka and Anna Vinca Kish. Anna says a whole bunch of people came by to see her. Anna and Franciszka live in Transylvania, an area of northern Romania. They have a cramped stable just outside their kitchen. It's muddy inside and dim. The ceiling is low, and it smells of hay. Francesca is still proud to introduce Flory and her calf Bimbushka, whose cowbells ring with every move. Even if Flory didn't come directly from Norma Jean Sims, Anna and her husband do know where their cow came from.
America.
Just what those Americans are like and why they would send a cow to strangers halfway around the world is a bit more of a mystery. Franchkis says the Americans must be peaceful people with money and a big heart. Flory's milk has more than doubled their income to $300 a month. All of a sudden, in the stable, Anna just walks away from the microphone. She starts fussing with Flory and is talking faster than the translator can follow. It takes a minute to figure out what's going on.
She said that when she received the cow was very beautiful, fat and healthy, and she gave so much milk that they almost didn't know what to do with it. Now she started to lose some weight when she started having some problems, which is about 1 month ago.
Anna's worried and wishes Heifer International would send someone to help. Heifer does help in serious situations, but it provides lots of training for farmers, and in cases like this, it expects them to use local vets. It turns out, giving a cow is a lot more complicated than just picking an animal out of a catalog. Heifer's goal is to make farmers self-sufficient and have a program that keeps going when they leave. That's why when Anna and Francis got Flory, they had to promise to give her first offspring, that's Bimbushka, to another family. Some farmers also have to give milk to children at local hospitals and orphanages. Actually, Francis says it's nice to have something to give.
If we can give also, then we advance as a community and maybe we will become like the Americans.
The translator doesn't say so, but Francis is talking about the Americans he knows. The big-hearted ones who give cows to poor farmers, the ones like Norma Jean Sims. Not those of us who give Starbucks gift cards to our friends who already have too much. That would be me. I was kind of relieved they didn't ask what was on my shopping list this year.
I am cow, hear me moo. I weigh twice as much as you. And I look good on the barbecue. Yogurt, curd, cream, cheese, and butters made from liquid from my udders. I am cow, hear me moo.
We normally use just our own music on the show or stuff by the Smarts, but that cow song is just too good to pass up. It's by a group called The Arrogant Worms, and they are from, can you guess? Canada. That story was by Julie Seipel. The Week is produced by Sandon Totten and me. We are edited by Kate Smith. Our next Story Slam is coming up December 17th in Minneapolis. We'd love to see you there. More info and tickets at minnesotapublicradio.org. I'm Jeff Horwich. Kind of a special show this week because of the holiday, but next week we are back to our old newsy selves. I'll see you then.